This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 179. May the merch be with you. Hello, and welcome to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is one of your co-hosts, Michael Martin, coming to you live and in person for a fantastically fun Force Friday part deux.
And this is your other Michael co-host, who's also here on a fun Friday part deux.
Let's talk about Force Friday. Let's talk about Star Wars. Let's talk about all the stuff that's going on, because I started watching the Force Friday 2 countdown on the Star Wars app with the Imperial Star Destroyers appearing over world famous places like the Eiffel Tower and the Hollywood sign and others. And I downloaded the app to see if I could make that happen and watch it from my phone too. But apparently I am not geolocated at any of these wonderful, fantastic places.
And also you would just see the exact same AR footage that everybody else did, according to that video.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, couldn't they do different things, like have different shading, or at least imply that, you know, in New York they're using these types of TIE fighters, and the other ones, the X-Wings are coming in to help protect, or, you know, give us some variety. Come on, it's just SMOP.
Throw us a bone.
Throw us a bone here.
Throw us a lightsaber. So I did, however, manage... in the Force app there, or the Star Wars app, to create myself a smidge of a video using the fun Find the Force stuff. And I managed to get a video of, what's it called? It's not a BB-8 because this is a new one. It is a different droid.
BB-9B or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah, it looks like a BB-8. I mean, but it's not black. A BB-8. Kind of.
Yeah, with silver.
Kind of, yeah, so silver. Well, I'll show you in a second. It's not exactly the evil BB-8. It is what looks like a very industrialized BB-8 sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
you ought to include that video in the show.
I was just about to share it with you.
That's actually BB-9. Because, you know, it's one better.
No, it's 2BB-2 is what it is. 2BB-2.
So that's a different one, because according to the Last Jedi Star Wars website, there's a black one with a flat top. That's BB-9.
Yes, and that's what I was trying to say. That is not that. It is a different one.
It's a different one.
I will put it into our little Slackaroo chat so that you can see it, because it's like, this is pretty slick. At least I thought it was.
BB-2.
There were a number of other elements in the Business Insider, Tech Insider article from yesterday, notably the one from the partnership between Disney and Lenovo. And did you get a chance to see something like this? Have you seen this before? Or is this news to you?
I have not seen this before, but I have heard about some of the tie-ins that people are doing. But no, I haven't seen that one before.
Yeah, I hadn't either. And that looked pretty slick. It had some of the, I guess it's the PlayStation VR sort of aspects to it, with the lightsaber having that glowy portion of it, I guess, to show up better for you on the glasses and other stuff like that. And the price point, $200, is still a little on the heavy side for an experience, a Star Wars experience that looks interesting, but I wonder how much more there is to that, you know?
Yeah.
All right, so that's what I wanted to send. Bingo. Bingo boingo. So we'll have to see some more about it. Maybe there'll be some more video before too long. And then the other example that I saw down here too is that the opportunity to play a holochess game looks pretty slick. And I've always wanted to play holochess, so having a chance to do something like that could be really, really, really fun.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the old battle chess game that I used to play in my Commodore 64.
Oh, that's right. There, I remember there was a Windows one too, where instead of the normal chess characters, you could have others in that they would fight and win, following, of course, normal chess rules.
Right, which is different than, what was the other one? Archon or Akron?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Where you actually battled it out and you would not play according to normal chess rules. But battle chess used normal chess rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, two wonderful little chess games that were in the day. But yeah, the holographic chess from Star Wars is always one of my favorite little scenes.
Well, cool. So lots going on today for this merchandise focus day. And one of the things that you had found actually is in the same Business Insider grouping here too, this Little Bits example. Tell me a little bit about that.
A little bit about the Little Bits. Yeah. So this is cool. If you remember, 2 years ago at MoogFest, I got a chance to sit down at one of the sessions that was all about Little Bits, and you got to basically create a music player leveraging a light sensor and the different color of photocopy on a piece of paper. And it would spin like a turntable and it played music. So I've always been kind of fascinated with these guys. And what they've done is they've, in alignment with the Force 2 Fun Friday, the merch be with you idea, they've come out with a droid inventor kit that allows you to build your own little R2-D2. It's got a bunch of different sensors and actuators and jump boards that you can use to program it, etc. And they got a couple of different examples. One's an R2-D2. One's one of the droids with the bad motivator from the Jawa traveling little thing.
Yes.
Traveling droid show, we should call it. But they actually take you through how to build it. And then, you know, like most things with Little Bits, you would then modify it and tweak and do other things to do cool things. So this was really, really neat. And I like the fact that the R2-D2 frame is translucent, so you can actually see the insides.
That's pretty cool. So you can, like, build the circuit board up and hook it up in different ways, right?
Yep.
That's really neat. You know, if you're into robotics, that's a really, really, really cool thing. Now, what if you weren't into robotics, but you really liked building things?
Well, then you would probably really, really be into Lego.
Oh, would you ever?
Oh, man.
So I first saw this yesterday, no surprise, from a tweet from Andy Piper.
Yes, and, same here. That's when I saw it too.
And I was like, oh, I got to see more about this. And holy free holies, this is a Lego set to end all Lego sets. Over 7,500 pieces. It comes in a box that looks like it will require it like a hand truck to get to your car. And in fact, some of the websites I was looking at yesterday seemed to indicate that if you were to go to a Lego store and buy said Lego kit, they would have some portable, disposable hand truck kind of deal for you to get it from the Lego store to your car.
Well, given the price, I can understand that too.
Well, I mean, they should have, you know, special to your car delivery in a small lift or something too. $799 for this Carillion freighter, but
roughly not quite 10 cents per piece of Lego.
That's one way to look at it. You could look at it that way. And sometimes that kind of works.
Yeah.
But just watching the video, seeing the care that this was put together, that you could build it not in the Last Jedi kind of getup, but in the Empire Strikes Back mode. And
Force Awakens or Empire Strikes Back.
So you can have the round radar dish instead of that rectangular one that looks really weird on it. Just amazing. And the tail that you have with it, the ability to open up various compartments and pieces of it and see the holodeck.
What do you have? Holochess.
Holochess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. This I couldn't agree with you more. just looks amazing. It's one of those pieces that'll probably take forever to build, and you'll never want to take it apart.
Why would you take it apart?
Because then you can build it again. That was the great thing about Legos, is you build it and rebuild it and change it and tweak it and do other things.
Yeah.
But they've gotten so much into building these kits that are really designed for one thing, or in this case, two things only.
Build, display.
Build and display. And the thing that I really liked about Legos growing up was the build and break it apart and build something else. This is just phenomenal. And it's 1.5 meters when fully assembled. 1.5 feet, not meters. Oh, that's better. Because 1.5 meters would be huge.
1.5 feet?
1.5 feet and 1 foot wide. When fully assembled, it measures 1.5 feet long and 1 foot wide.
That's too small.
Look
at it in the video.
What they say.
Hey, incorrect dimensions. If you look at the video and look how big it is,
oh, yeah.
It's bigger than that.
Well, maybe the guy is just really small.
All right. Well, maybe he is. Who knows? So if you were a minifig on this ship and you were to do something like, you know, playing the holo chess there, and you might say, hey, Alexa, can you give me a hint on where to move my so I can win the game? If you were wearing a braggy dash in your ear,
yes,
you could do that.
Yes. Yeah, I saw this this week that Braggy, which we've talked about for over a year now, as these really nice high-end wireless Bluetooth earbuds with noise canceling. You could swim in them. They have room for audio, so you can listen to music while you're swimming. Are adding, via a software update, the ability to communicate with Amazon's Alexa service.
Yeah.
So does that mean while you're swimming underwater, you can go blah, 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 blah,
and delivered to your home via drones would be the new Star Wars Lego Millennium Falcon kit.
That's right. But this is... It just kind of keeps hitting that drumbeat we've been talking about on the fact that the interface of computers is changing. It's going to voice. It's going to augmented reality. And in this case, it's going to augmented voice in your head.
Right. Right. And you could probably do a better version of Mr. Mumbles with the Braggy Dash too, because you don't have to speak that loudly in order to activate it, I would imagine.
Well, it's probably no different based off of the directional microphone that you have on like AirPods or any other Bluetooth device, right?
Well, yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, I hadn't thought about it too much because my experience with voice activation has been to hold the device, signal to the device that you want to do something with the voice activation, which we're being kind here and not doing over this podcast, and then doing whatever it is. But if you had the device on your body, but not requiring some sort of tactile signaling to say, hey, I'm about to issue a command, that's another neat thing. And has already been there, right?
That's because AirPods. I know you're dealing with just a subset of potential voice systems.
Right.
And even with that subset, if you have it plugged in and powered on, you can tell it to use the wake word, right?
Right.
So in your car, as an example, you tend to have your phone plugged in, charging while you're driving, and then the voice interface makes a lot of sense because you can say, hey, voice assistant in my car on my cell phone named blah, 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 please, you know, play music by, I don't know, the Dead Milkmen.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then it will wake up on the wake word, switch to that content, and then shut itself off.
Right.
So you don't have to press the button.
True.
Yeah. But the point... it really is changing how you interact, and I'm finding that when I do want to like listen to certain music while I'm driving, I will tell the car I want to listen to music. As one example.
Yeah, it does. So you found another article that relates really nicely to this too, that postulates that you're not going to have one voice assistant interact with another voice assistant in order to do something. You're going to go to your particular voice assistant to do the particular things that you want to do. And the article was titled, "Nobody is going to ask Cortana to talk to Alexa."
Yeah, and what's interesting about this really is there was an announcement recently that Amazon and Microsoft were partnering to make their voice assistants accessible to each other, right? So mm-hmm. that you could have, say, Cortana theoretically on an Amazon Echo, and you could have Alexa on your Windows phone.
Right.
So if you still have a Windows phone. And while from a purely business sense, it kind of made sense on paper, the article was kind of going through the concept of, does this really make sense from a voice assistant perspective? And specifically the point that you're talking about of, will I tell this voice assistant to launch that voice assistant to execute that specific skill available only on that assistant? For example, let me pick on an example I was actually thinking about this week. It was raining, and so I said, "Hey, S word, how much longer will it rain?" And it goes, "You're right, it is raining." So I was like, "Well, I'm going to say, hey, S word, why don't you launch G word? And then I will ask G word how long it's going to rain."
Did that work?
I didn't tell it to go launch G word. I'm going to have to test it though. And that type of interaction makes no sense, right? And given the value of the data that each of these platforms gets by interacting and learning from that interaction, the likelihood that Amazon would say, "Hey, we've got these services called skills that are available on our mm-hmm. Echo, and if you tried to get them from Cortana, we will hand off control to Cortana," I would think is next to nil. And you want to be, I mean, the value of a platform, whether it's an operating system, a web services platform, or whatever, is that you become the trusted interface to the world. And if you start handing off your control to other platforms, the value to the business itself is going to be dramatically lower. And I don't think they're going to do it, no matter what they put on paper.
Maybe so, but now we're into an encapsulation type theory. So let's just imagine for a moment that there is an AI named Z, and this AI named Z is intended to be your interface to the world, and the people working on Z spend all their energy to sort out the best natural language interfaces, but they don't try to make Z do everything. They make Z be in a position to call other things, right? Just for argument's sake.
Yes, we call that the platform of platform strategy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's turtles all the way up in this case, right?
Yeah.
So if you start now with Z, and Z goes and interfaces with all kinds of other ones and asks maybe six different other AIs, "Hey, when's it going to stop raining? Maybe when it gets to dark sky and dark sky returns through its API, oh, it's going to stop raining in about an hour." And the other ones are like, it could determine that the best place to ask that question, and maybe the first place to ask that question for later, is dark sky, while still continuing to learn, you know, machine learning, and being that interface back to you. So you could platform the platforms for this, because
all of the platforms have an API that's
voice.
As the main platform, you end up spending a lot of time, effort, money, or even machine learning cycles to address the nuances for every other platform, at which point those other platforms at any point in time can take
Could
that
change.
Away from you by changing their platform. And so you lose control of the user experience that you're trying so hard to control and to monetize.
Yeah, you're right. And I'm not suggesting that this is the easy thing to do, but the point that the author of the article is trying to make is like, no one AI will rule them all, which I tend to agree. But now if we are in a platform type strategy, I'm sorry, what?
Skynet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, obviously not watching nearly enough movies here, but being able to send out and aggregate back, do it fast enough, and the interface to all these other AI platforms that are being thought of right here, these are all voice level interfaces. So arguably a machine AI could use voice interfaces probably more effectively and faster than the other ones than you could via voice anyway. So the APIs exist, even if it's just voice. I mean, I argue against myself a little bit. You could say, well, yes, that's right, Michael. But if I asked a question to my hypothetical AI platform Z, and Z asked that same question, even in parallel real time to six other ones, if those six other ones then responded in parallel back to Z, and then Z had to sort out which one was right, the best it could possibly do is a tiny latency off of the equivalent of the person
of the slowest response.
Of the slowest one. Yeah. And if it's waiting for the slowest response.
Yeah. Because you want to get that response in order to validate. And over time, you might say, well, Q is always slow. I'm just going to ignore it. Or Q is always slow, but always right.
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 Yeah. So I'll wait for Q to respond before I check everything else.
Yeah. So again, you get into this situation where you are beholden on others for the real value that your customers or your users are looking for.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way I would try to crack that nut is to apply machine learning techniques to it, where I would be feeding and cranking on the platform for Z to anticipate what my user population might want to do. And one question would be, is it going to stop raining anytime soon?
Yeah. So it's really funny. Years ago, when we were looking at how could you take high-end virtual world platforms and put them on cell phones. We worked with one of our labs and created basically a screen scraper for one of the kind of the popular low-end virtual worlds. And we had it running on Windows Phone, believe it or not.
I remember that, yeah.
And the basic concept worked, but the problem that you end up in is then you have to have all these virtualized instances of the platforms you want to run against. Now, you don't have to do that with voice assistants, but you may need to have, I can just imagine a giant room with all these noise constraining boxes with a microphone and six speakers in it, right. One for each of the popular voice platforms. And you say, hey, Z, what time is it? And it goes, hey, Z, A, B, D, G, what time is it? And then it goes, D says 4, G says 5. And all of that having to, you know, a bit of a ludicrous speed example, but, you know, how would you virtualize each of those so you're not breaking terms of service?
Right, because you don't want your platform to be consumed by another platform,
right,
where that platform now takes all the benefit.
So you put legal requirements or contractual constraints around it that say every time you get an answer from me, it has to say, S says it's going to rain for 3 hours.
Right.
So you end up in a situation where, again, conceptually, yes, it makes sense building the platform of platforms to provide the best experience to the end user. In practice, I don't think you ever get there unless you go into, and even here it doesn't work, but unless you go into some base common denominator standard of what these voice platforms will be, and everybody codes to that standard, But then I'm still going to say, you know, we adhere to standard 1.1, but we have these six other extensions that make it really valuable to come over to S or to come over to G, right? Which keeps the fragmentation going.
Yeah. Well, or you have to have the ability to deeper link into those services, and then those individual services become monetized, and you've got to pay for the value that you get back.
And
from
you can
the
do
services.
It all with Bitcoin.
Well, you know, if I wanted to find out how to do this and how to set this stuff up, probably the first place I would do or go is probably Google.
Yeah. Yeah. I would, you know, just go to the G and say, hey, how do I build a platform of platforms?
Yeah. Or, you know, well, Google is your friend.
Fix a toilet.
Or just about anything.
Or
so
about
this
anything.
Is another article you saw,
yeah.
Which was how Google is trying to put together the aggregation of those how do I kind of questions into something even more interesting.
Yeah, they're working together with Chowquin GV.
Yeah,
I think is how you pronounce
something
it.
Something like that.
Which is a interactive visual data journalist. Just trying to capture all the different things or the top 100 things that people ask on how to do on Google. And it's interesting. I was actually listening to the Daily Tech News Show the other day, and they were talking not to this story in particular, but they're talking about how YouTube is becoming the place for a lot of people to learn how to do things, and they don't even worry about knowing how to do them because they figure when they need to know how to do it, they'll fire up YouTube real quick and say, how do I change my tire? Right? Not thinking that doing that in the middle of the night on a deserted road with a broken down car is probably not a really safe way to learn how to suddenly change your tire. But that got me thinking, and then I saw this article, and it's really, really kind of interesting the way they're showing those top 100 searches and how so many people have gone away from learning or knowing how to do things to learning or knowing how to find out how to do things.
Yeah, so if we pop to the Skynet example or the Matrix example, you know, I need to know how to fly a Huey helicopter right now, right?
Yep.
Okay, let's go, right? So just-in-time learning is something that has an awful lot of benefit to it if it can be imparted fast enough. Being able to learn and understand how to fly a helicopter by downloading that information to one's head is certainly something. But when I read this article, where I leapt to immediately, and I wish I could lay my hands on this video, was one of the early Microsoft HoloLens examples where it was a plumbing repair or something like that, where you could wear the HoloLens. You didn't have experience in how to repair the pipes under your sink or remove the clog or whatever it was. And the HoloLens would help walk you through in a way that a video just can't, because it can identify the things that you need to do something with and show you what it is that you need to do.
Yeah.
Do you remember the time when we were having this conversation about car companies where diesel engines were being introduced to the United States for the first time? And while mechanics are super familiar with gasoline powered engines, the diesel engine might be a little confusing to them. And augmented reality would be a great way to say, oh, you need to take the twiddly bit over here and connect it to the fiddly bit over there, and that's going to solve that problem.
Yes. Mm. I'm trying to remember, though, there's a difference between diesel and gas engine. I think it's if you put diesel in a gas engine, the car explodes. But if you put gasoline in a diesel engine, it just runs
really
badly. The
car implodes.
I can't remember which one of those is right. It might be the inverse.
Either way,
of that.
It's bad. And
one of them just runs badly and the other one explodes. And it has to do with the way the combustion cycle works and the mixture of oil in with the gas or something like that. We should ask Google how to...
We could say, how do you prevent from exploding a diesel or gasoline engine when using the wrong fuel?
Yes. we should do that. Let me see. How to decide on putting gas in a diesel engine.
All right, now this is going to be cool.
Accidentally mixing, first hit, accidentally mixing gasoline and diesel fuel, what happens?
Oh, there you go.
Let's say you put a small amount of gas into your diesel fuel. The first thing is it's going to depress the flash point of the diesel, which can be dangerous given that the pockets of higher concentration of gasoline can develop in a tank. So the flash point won't be consistent. Given the large difference, it doesn't take much difference. As little as 1% gasoline contamination will lower the flash point by 18 degrees Celsius.
Whoa.
Which can damage the fuel pump and mess up injectors. If you put the other way, it's heavier. Gasoline burns in an engine, octane rating, blah, blah, blah. Given higher levels of diesel contamination will damage the engine, give you blown pistons and cracked heads. So putting diesel into a gas is bad.
Yeah, it's bad either way. It's not good. You don't want to do it. But you see where I was going with the augmented reality version of this, right? So if you have the data sets of what people are searching for and you have the examples of what works. So, you know, I'm willing to admit it. I'm big enough to say this, that I don't tie my own bow tie often enough. And when I need to, I turn to the web to go help me find out, you know, how exactly do I tie my bow tie, right? Wouldn't it be a great augmented reality experience that would show me, okay, now push this part here, right? Because it can see what I can see and do it in the mirror the way I need to see it, because I don't have to try to go, okay, in the paper, it's like this, but I'm looking myself in the mirror, so it's like that. That'd be a great thing.
Yeah, except I don't wear bow ties.
Well, you know, when I go to a black tie event or something like that, right? You know, gotta look the part. So Google Trends website has all this kind of crazy, intriguing information, and there could be some very interesting monetization opportunities to apply what is popular, what seems to be working for people, and then being able to build the augmented reality experience off of that and deliver it to those that are searching and wanting to find. That's where I think this particular article is the most intriguing for me.
Sounds
good. Even though
good.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be a good way to turn that into a monetization model that would really drive something interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
all right.
Game. Having said that, any games on your end?
There is one game that I was finding on my end, but I haven't. It's not really a game, but I will download it. Aside from the Star Wars app that we just talked about, there is something called the Icon Factory.
Oh, yeah. That's the guys who did Twitterific originally.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I guess you're right. So the Icon Factory, they have an app, and I've not...
Or is it TweetDeck? One of the two.
Oh, no, it is. It is Twitterific, I think is where it is.
Okay. So Icon Factory.
Maybe, shoot. Am I getting this wrong? It's not the Icon Factory. What is it? It's something like that, though.
Iconography. Yeah, they were Twitterific. What's the name of the app?
Hang on. Getting it.
Because I'm looking at their site to see if there's anything there.
No. Noun Project. The Noun Project.
The Noun Project.
Yes. So there's an app for that. Noun Project. And what they do is they have icons for apps of freaking literally everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've loved using them before, and they've got I've used their website plenty of times. I haven't used their app, and that was what I wanted to download to really get a good look at, because a guy that I follow has put together a list of tools that he uses. So the guy's name is Josh Clark. And he's the founder of Big Medium, which is a design studio specializing in what's next, connected devices, mobile experiences, responsive web design, a whole bunch of stuff like that. And so he's given a big list of all the things that he uses. And the Noun Project is something I've used before. I just hadn't used the app before. And I'll put a link into his list of all the great things that he uses too.
Cool. That's very cool. So in interest of sharing interesting things going on, we've gotten deep and heavy into rehearsal for our upcoming show. So anybody in the tri-state area, as in try to come down and visit us at durhamsavoyards.org, we'll be performing a brand new world premiere of an orchestration for the missing orchestration of Gilbert and Sullivan's Thespis, which is going to be really, really awesome, coming up at the early half of October.
That should be super, super fun.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it.
It should be fun. And that's why I'm not having much time lately to play other games. So I hope any of our local listeners can come out and check out what we're doing over there.
Well, you know, I will.
Yes.
And now that I've put Josh's material here, you can see all kinds of other productivity aids that will help you do what you need to do.
Very cool. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed the show, and keep dropping us emails and tweets and other things about interesting things to talk about. And we'll get to them next time over at gamesatwork.biz.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.